interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
So this has been a long time coming. I've been telling listeners about this and people in my classes and people I run across when we start talking about putting in work and doing things. And I tell people, hey, you got to get out there. You got to build rapport. You got to talk to people, you know, one human to another human. And I got a person on today as a guest who I think everybody is going to be excited to hear what he's got to say. He's been there. He's done it. When I talk about these things in this gang world and how people get in it and get out of it and how it affects everybody and how people can be better in law enforcement, how people can be better in their community, the first step is knowledge and the first step is talking to one another. And so I want to introduce all the listeners today to a cat we're going to call Level. And that's all you need to know. We're not going to be using government names or anything like that. Yeah. So for those of y'all listening, if you want to reach out to me directly, it's going to be at thedisruptors.bc.ski, that's S-K-I, at Gmail. And I say that because after you listen to this, you're probably going to want to reach out, especially if you're in the law enforcement world and maybe want to spend some time with myself and Level in a private conversation where we can kind of help develop you and your skills to be a little bit better at what you're doing. And that's not taking away from anybody out there in their skill set. It's just saying this is the best way that he and I can share our knowledge and bring people along. And this mm-hmm. technology is helping us. So I'll post stuff like that in social media, but reach out to me in that email if you're interested in sitting down with us in a private consultation time where we can go over some of this stuff and develop you a little bit better. So enough about me talking. I'm going to turn it over to Level. And the first thing, man, I want you to kind of explain to people is the burning question. People are always like, how does someone get in the world of gangs and what set and, like, how does that happen? Like, you know, were you born into it? Did you know somebody that got you into it? Like, just kind of fill them in, man.
All right. A little bit about my story is this. I had family members that was a part of the gang. Like, I had a father that stepped out when I had a young age. So I kind of looked forward more to my mother, you know, for guidance. But as I got into the school ages of being around my peers, you pick up different habits. And I kind of grew up in a rough neighborhood where that's all it was. So you either was this or you either was that, you know what I'm saying? And that's how it all boiled down to it. But it destroys a lot of lives. Especially if it's the way you go about it. The generation today is a lot different than the generation that I grew up in coming into it. But let me wind it back a little bit. A lot of us that gets into that life, some of us have good up well-beings and two-parent homes and stuff like that. Sometimes we just get addicted to what we see. You know what I'm saying? We have peers that come to school with the latest stuff, and your mom's on a budget, so she only can get you the penny loafers and the button-up tops. And then you got the people that you see on TV, and you just want that life. And you got friends that guarantee you this is what you're going to get if you just be a part of this. So, I mean, a lot of people's lives are ruined because of just trying to impress and show the next person that they're about that life. And it's crushing, man. It's crushing.
Yeah, it's similar to when we've talked about it in the past and taught some people. It's that ultimate or worst case of just peer pressure of just, hey, if I don't have what the next kid has, how does that measure up? And especially if people around you are clowning you or, you know what I mean? Like making fun of you because you either don't have the recent line of clothes or shoes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can you get into specifics about how you actually got in and like, and what that was like when you first started getting into it?
Oh, wow. Okay. How I got in was kind of different. When I was younger, my mom and father, we had it rough at first, and then we moved to Georgia. So when I first was in Georgia, it wasn't a lot of people basically did town and town kind of beef. I got about 11, 12, and I moved back to North Carolina to like a rough neighborhood where I was going to a center for like the boys and girls. And I started seeing a lot of my peers just, you know what I'm saying, move a certain way. My mom would be like, you getting out of here with your mouth. You get kind of split. And I was picking up certain habits. So when I got about 13, 14, I had an older cousin that was getting money, stealing cars and going out about it stuff. And I just love the excitement of it. You know what I'm saying? Just to be a part of it. Just to have these group of people that I know are bad people, but people respect it, respect me. So I was like, oh, man, I want to be a part of this. You know, and from that day on, it's like I signed a contract of just years of destruction, you know? And it was just like, I remember the first time I had to prove myself is they see it. They'll know if you're not about it because the hesitation. But some of them just want to know if you just want to dedicate yourself to do it. And I just, a lot of stuff I regret. But I remember the break, back then you had to go on missions. When I came into the game, you had to go on missions. You had to complete certain amount of missions before they was able to even bring you in to get jumped to be a part of it. And then you got branded. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it was like, nowadays, they just be like, hey, yeah, man, you want to meet? You know what I'm saying? It's different now. But back then, we really had to put in work. And I remember back then, if you was a part of it, they know you put in their work.
Mm-hmm. And for those listening, we'll drop just a little bit of information there for you. Sometimes when you're dealing with East Coast blood nations, a lot of the terminology is going to be, when you hear Level say missions, they may throw out a double O. They may say, oh, he's got to put in work, or he's got to go do a double O, or you may see that message or come across it or whatever. But it's just this idea that someone has to prove themselves before they join the organization. And before everybody starts to kind of go, well, that's crazy, I would never do that, think about some of the other organizations you've been in society. So if people have joined the military, there's certain things that you have to do in the military to kind of prove yourself. And we have all these rites of passages in society. And so most organizations and closed off society, so to speak, will kind of have that rite of passage. And I think most gangs are all kind of the same in that sense. Someone has to prove themselves or maybe even get approached. Like, and you tell us, Level, can someone get into like a blood set or a Crip or any, you know, a gang set if they already have a relative in or someone who's willing to vouch for them?
Of course. Sometimes it even be as good as you may have a relative that's high ranking. He may look at it like, dang, I get my three little cousins and all that to be a part of me. My squad is gonna get bigger. And that's how they do it. It's more about the numbers sometimes. And then, you know what I'm saying? It just you even get some times where you may be one of the kids that they grew up with and you got a lot of money. They know that you can endorse bringing in the guns and you can endorse bringing in the drugs to bring more money in. And they'll bring you home just for that. Because you're beneficial to them. You're beneficial to the game.
Yeah. When you had mentioned earlier, you said branded. What exactly did you mean by that?
See, back in my generation of it, we used to have to like get what we call paws. It'll be three circles, you know what I'm saying, like a print. Mm-hmm. We'll have to get branded on us. And when you got basically labeled, they would add a fourth one to it, and that would be called a fourth. You know what I'm saying? People would know then that you know what I'm saying, you basically fool. Like you just no one's to deal with you. You know what I'm saying? You out of the game, you know. So your label, basically.
Yeah. So what Level's referring to has been historically referred to as either dog paws or triple O's. And it's an East Coast thing with blood sets that operate out in the East Coast from New York all the way down to Florida. So members would often get branded with three circles. And those circles, or those triple O's or dog paws, whichever way you want to refer to it, showed the rest of the world that you're a made man, basically, like you're a part of this set and that you've done things in order to get in. And that if you mess with that one person, you messing with that set or that nation, depending on how they want to refer themselves. Yep. So when you're saying branding, it's an actual brand. It's heating up the barrel of a gun. it can be, you know, years and years bottle and years tops. Ago. What's that?
Yeah. They use bottle tops, you know what I'm saying? Anything that can give that perfect circle. You know what I'm saying? Again, I see people use like coins, like quarters. You know what I'm saying? Get it high enough to stick it, bring that skin off, it'll make that imprint.
Mm-hmm. And so is that something that is still kind of around or not?
No, I haven't heard or even seen in years. A lot of people that you see with them now, you know they're from that generation. You know what I'm saying? You see somebody with a pole now, you know they was banging back in the days in your generation. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But all the newer, like people that's different now. They know people don't even really flag like how it was back in the days. You know, it was real big on showing, repping what we had. Nowadays, it's kind of different.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the things that I talk about with people and citizens and trying to explain to them. When you're talking about flagging, it's this idea or this time that a person can actually show everybody that they are a made man or they're part of the set. And they'll just fly a bandana or what we refer to as a flag on a certain side of their body and use it to a certain color. And so for a lot of East Coast bloods, it's going to be a red bandana. It's going to be folded on the right side of the body. But several years ago, that kind of went away. A lot of people just stopped flagging, so to speak. I'm old enough to know, give it time and it'll come back. It'll be like that retro thing. Like, you know, younger cats will be like, man, I've seen pictures of the old heads and now I want to put a flag in my pocket. Now I want to, you know, wrap a flag around my wrist or whatever, put a headpiece or a crown piece on. But, and that's why I say it's important to kind of understand this stuff historically and also to treat people with respect, you know, in that sense that, and you can speak on this, what happens if someone in law enforcement were to disrespect, say, a blood who was flagging or who had some kind of indicator on their body like that, like a bandana. If an officer walks up and yanks it out and throws it on the ground or disrespects it somehow, like what usually would happen?
Right then and there, you have to get active. Whether that's you going to jail for assault on the officer or whatever, you have to show some kind of get back. Because if you don't, it's a violation on you. You have to get in that circle. You have to get in that pit. You know what I'm saying? That's how it is. It's like basically F both ways. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's why you kind of just basically got to just be aware of your surroundings.
Yeah. So what Level's talking about is when officers openly disrespect a gang member, and I use that example with a flag or a bandana, but it could be with anything. It could be like making fun of somebody's set or making fun of them, their physical feature, whatever it is. If you're just showing open disrespect, then usually the code is that member has to like assault you. They have to push back somehow. And so then like Level just said, you know, you're effed either way. Because if you assault back, now you're going to catch an extra charge. If you don't, you're going to get DP'd or disciplinary punishment, and you're going to have to get in the pit, you know, or the bullpen. You're going to have to get in there at the next meeting and basically take a beating from the gang because that member didn't follow up on that code. So we say that and we bring it up because historically, you know, going back 10, 12, 15 years, officers sometimes would think that was the way to deal with gang members, like openly showing disrespect. Not all officers, but I'm saying that sometimes officers would do that. And so it's one of those things that we check our own. So we would pull officers aside and say, hey, no, we're not doing that. You're not disrespecting anybody. You address them as sir. You do what you do. You stay professional. If the fight's on and you got to use force, you use force. You get them up, you dust them off. You take them to jail and you explain to them, hey, you were good until you went in your waistband or until you elbowed me or you did whatever. Like, I treated you with respect. You bowed up on me, so I had to handle it like that. That's how everything started to transition. And a lot of really good officers started really doing a lot of good work in the community and helping people in that sense of trying to build that rapport and not, you know, mad dogging dudes out there or trying to flex because it that's not going to work. all that's going to do is create that situation where somebody's got to act. And most often, go ahead.
I'm about to say, because a lot of members, you know what I'm saying, is really in it for the money, are really in, you know what I'm saying? So when it comes to like some officer that's like, look, man, I'm just trying to get my money and go home. Or look, man, and you show me respect, I show you respect. But a lot of all, you get some officers just want to show you, like, you may think you're the big homie, but look, this is my street. I'm going to show you who's running it. And you get a lot of that kind of attitude towards it. And the members just be like, hey, man, I'm just out here trying to make my money. Look, I feed the kids ice cream when the ice cream come, and then I'm not on that what you think I'm on. But a lot of officers just think that because they see that red rag or something, and because of what they seen on TV or what they heard about these, they think every member is like that. And some of them's not. You got some good people that own businesses. You got good members that got businesses, establishes that's for the outreaches from communities and everything. You just can't, you can't judge it by the flag. That's how I look at it.
It's the, hey, it's the same way with officers. Like, mm-hmm. officers are like, not all officers are bad. Like, don't judge me based on, you know, Mr. Heavy Hands that dealt with somebody, you know, 2 weeks ago in the block or whatever. So it's that mm-hmm. idea of human to human. If I show you respect, you show me respect. And then mm-hmm. we handle this business we got to handle. And if you don't have to take me to jail today, then I appreciate that, you know, and I'm gonna move on down and you go do what you got to do. But it is one of those things that you bring up. Not every gang member is the same. It's like you mm-hmm. said, a lot of guys are just out there kind of hustling, trying to put food on the table. What if,
and some, mm-hmm. and I'm about to say, and some of them just literally just grew up in it. And it's just something that just came along with their family. Like, over my big brother was in there. So I'm the little brother and I got the two of them, but I'm in school. I really, you know what I'm saying? Really don't even be a part of it, but it's just tagged to them because it's kind of like it's in it. I mean, it's through his family. You know what I'm saying? Got a lot of stuff like that. But like you made a good point too. It is some great cops. You know what I'm saying? You get instances where I had a friend, you know what I'm saying? Kept getting locked up, but he kept getting locked up by the same cop. And the cop would be sometimes, you know what? I could lock, charge for this too, but I'm just going to look up for you because I know if you get one more strike, it's this and that. And so you're going to do this. And then you get it. He's like, dang, thank you. I appreciate that. So then now you get a agenda with him. And then he may got little homies that acting up, shooting us stuff, doing stuff. And you can be one of them cops that he cool with. So he can reach out to him, be like, hey, man, you know, your little homie that did this, I just need you to just tell him to chill out. Or I just need you to tell him to come talk to me. And he may be the only person that little homie will listen to, because that's his big homie, that'll be able to tell him, hey, man, you did it. Go handle that. You know what I'm saying? Or he good. You know what I'm saying? Go handle it. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes it's okay, and it's good to have a kind of rapport with, you know what I'm saying, a connection with somebody that's in.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of those things, too, where if a city is experiencing like a lot of set versus set violence, so if you just got like mm-hmm. two sets that are beefing, and a lot of that hasn't always been the common trend in the last few years because everything's starting to kind of get fragmented. Yeah. But if you have that going on, like you were saying, like, you know, on both sides, so cops mm-hmm. can put the word out like, hey, y'all have to squash this before we do. And the way we're going to do it, it's starting arresting everybody for every little charge. Mm-hmm. But if you put the word out and you hold any kind of rank, if it's the 2-star, 3-star, whatever, like you put the word out that we're going to stop, you know, with shooting back and forth and the violence, because mm-hmm. it's bad for business. And I also want to bring up, like, for people listening, also imagine you have to put yourself in someone else's shoes. So when people join a gang, and especially they join it at a younger age, they may not fully understand what goes on in the upper ranks. In some gangs, the upper ranks are completely corrupt, and so they're charging dues to lower ranking members, and they're taking that money and promising that they're going to take care of them when they get locked up. They'll put money on their books, that sort of thing. But if this stuff is not happening in a gang that's actually also enforcing their codes by physical punishment, like by beating their members if they violate the code, and also beating them if they don't pay dues, I want everybody to kind of understand what it would be like to be 17, 18, 19, 20, and you're part of this organization, And now you got to pay dues. You got to try to get money. You got to dodge the cops. You know, you're committing crimes, whatever it is, if it's selling, if it's fraud, if it's, you know, doing robberies, whatever it is. And then on top of that, you know, now you're part of something that if the feds sweep in, they're going to lock everybody up, or the local officers and deputies are going to start locking everybody up based on somebody else's BS. You know, the dude to your left or right that is in the same set, maybe even the same rank, but he's got beef with somebody, he's got problems with someone, and now he starts to draw everybody else kind of into that. I think that's one of those things that I try to harp on a lot with people, is understand what that's like. Like, it is hard, and you tell me, but like, when you were young, did you even think about like what life will be like when you were past, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18? I mean, like, were you ever thinking what you were going to be like at 40 years old or 20 years old?
Mm-mm. See, okay, when you're going through this, all you're thinking about is the next week, the next day. Mm-hmm. What I'm doing the weekend on the club, come, oh, damn, bro, get out next month. We're going to do this and that. That's only thing, you're only thinking about the present. You're not thinking about the future-wise. And it ain't until you actually start going through the letdowns, going through the people leaving you hanging, going through the senseless stuff happening to your family members because of what you are part of, going through all that. Anything, when you start going through all that, you'll see like this is not my life. This ain't for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's and once someone sees that, what do they do then though?
Once they see that, they just like, okay, they start pulling back. And then it starts to have the other members question, like, oh, what he got going on? Or he must be a snitch. Or nah, or he must be fucking with the ops. And it has them in the question like that. And then they start treating you different because they start questioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the question always comes up. People ask, and they're like, hey, does someone have to kill to get out of a gang? And that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's been instances where they're like, all right, well, you want to be out, and for us not to harm your family, you got to go rob this store over here, or you got to go, I got beef with this nigga because he shot at us at dinner, so you got to go light the house up. You know what I'm saying? It better make the news. If it don't make the news, then we're gonna send you to do it again, like stuff like that. And people be terrified. They terrified, like, dang, people, you done wake up and your mom like, oh, such and such at the door, and you hate, like, damn, why you at my house? And that's just him warning you, like, yeah, nigga, I know you stay at. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And it's just the little intentional threats that you take serious because you done been around this person when he shot at people. You done been around this person when he robbed a person and shot him. Or you done heard about this murder case on TV. You were there when it happened, and you know what these people are capable of. So you be scared out your life. But sometimes you really never escape it. They'll tell you, do this, you out. Then a year later, circle back on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for what people in society have to understand is, just like they've seen the movies with the mafia, you know, and Hollywood's made the mafia, you know, these businessmen, and then behind closed doors, they're executing their own and stuff. Any organization that commits crimes and violence and homicides and controls their membership that way, it's the same way in gangs. So I think sometimes people want to discount gangs in that sense and not fully understand. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes leadership knows, if it, just like you said, they know where you live. So they're going to show up just to let you know, like, you're going to do what we said. And like you said, if it don't make the news, then you're going to do it again. Mm-hmm. And that's also what I want people to understand, is that there are a lot of people that need help in that situation, but they don't know how to ask for it. They don't know how to break that cycle until they're sitting in an interview room charged with a shooting or charged with a murder or armed robbery or something. And not everybody wants to hear it then. You know, sometimes they're like, look, you took a gun, you shot somebody, or you went there and robbed, you know, this corner store. Like, you're going to hold all this time, this 10 years in federal prison or whatever. I just think that at some point, I think if people knew more about the closed off society and the gangs that are operating, then if they're in social work or if they're in gang work or in, you know, police departments working gangs, mm-hmm. you know, that idea of how do you help somebody that wants to get out? And they don't even, I mean, they know they want to get out, but they're not expecting a patrol officer or a detective to say, like, basically, how can I help you change your future? Like, if your future is you want to stay in the gang, just know that you're going to end up in prison or dead or get, you know, a relative killed. But, you know, how can I extend my hand to help you out? You know?
What I'm learning now, too, I'm sorry to cut you off. What I'm learning now, too, and sometimes it'd be way worse than that. People always say, oh, you want to join the gang? Only way out is jail or death. And then sometimes it'd be mental, too. You'd be messed up, schizophrenic, and all kinds of, because you think about kind of stuff that you've done and people you didn't hurt, and that shit haunts you. So it becomes mental after a while. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, a lot of people need to start touching on that, too. It's a lot of people are mentally effed up, you know what I'm saying, from stuff that they had to occur from crimes they may have done. They had to go to prison and seen stuff in prison that just messed them up, and now they got to take medicine just to get through the day. Like, it's a lot of backlash, a lot of stuff that comes from these decisions you make being a part of these organizations.
Yeah, you raise a good point. You know, a lot of people don't think about that, the sense mm-hmm. that what goes on in a gang is the same thing that's going on in society. And a lot of people have either gone overseas and served in the military and seen death and had their lives threatened and dodged bullets. People in America, same thing. They're dealing with their own anxiety, their own problems. And in the gang world, it's one of those things where you, and you know this, but it's like mm-hmm. you have to worry about your opponent or your rivals. You got to worry about people you had beef with when you were like 16 years old or 17. Mm-hmm. And now are they part of a set, and are they going to hang on to that and run mm-hmm. across me in a gas station parking lot and light me up? You know what I mean? And you also have to worry about the police, the feds. You got to mm-hmm. worry about the vigilantes. Like, a lot of people aren't tracking what's going on in society, but historically, whenever violent crime spikes, and you can go back and look at it in the 1970s, you had low police recruiting. You had a lot of young men and women who did not want to be officers back then. So the departments mm-hmm. were suffering, standards dropped, police corruption started spiking, but also vigilante acts started happening where citizens were armed and they were shooting at people who yeah. were trying to rob them or break mm-hmm. into their homes, or even arguments on, say, a subway start to escalate.
That's high lately. A lot of people are doing that now lately. A lot of people are going to get their guns. They ain't taking nothing. And it'd be people that don't even have records to get locked up for shooting people because they feel like, hey, I watch the news, I see what's going on, and I'd rather protect myself. And it's getting worse, man. It's getting worse. Grandmother's carrying around guns now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people should know that. Just know in the next few years, they're going to be 4 to 5 times that in the news, more incidents of that, because people, every society hits that threshold where they're like, all right, we're done with this. Like, and it can be a neighborhood. It can be, you know, historically I've seen older mm-hmm. citizens who say, I'm done with that house down the street. Like, y'all either going to handle it or we're going to handle it. And then yep. you got, you know, grown men and women who handle business and do deal with it the way they want to. And yep. in other cities, it's been arsons where they burn down trap houses and stuff, or, you know, they go and shoot that house at like 4 mm-hmm. in the morning to kind of yep. let, you know, what in their minds, like, oh, the dealers or the gang members will get out, mm-hmm. you know, not understanding sometimes that's part of life. Like, dudes are just like, hey, who popped shots last night? Like, I don't know. And then business is back up. But mm-hmm. when you bring up that whole thing about just the mental health issue and what is going to happen as someone does either transition out of the gang or they end up going to prison at, you know, 20 years old and they're gone for 10 years and they come back, they do not come back the same person. Like, that is a total institution where everything is controlled And now everything is heightened. There, everyone is a threat. And then just like you said, when guys come back home, it's like one guy told me, he's like, man, you need to keep an eye on this dude. He still thinks he's on the yard. Like, he's walking around with shanks like on his body all the time. He's keeping them stashed in his car. He thinks everybody's out to get him. And because of my background with the psychology degree, I'm like, man, this guy's actually at that age where probably the onsets of schizophrenia started when he was in prison. And then he gets out and then he's trying to adapt and he's got to figure out how to make, you know, money without getting jammed up again and going back to prison. But the person that was around him was just like in a nice way, like, I don't want him to go back to prison, but you got to, y'all try to keep an eye on him. Like, they were worried that he was just going to snap and hurt somebody. Not like in a, you know what I mean? Like, not like he's trying to rob somebody, just like misread somebody, like, oh, this dude's trying to get a drop on him and then just stab him up. Yeah. So it's one of those things that when you're talking about that too, that in my world, I've often told newer officers and newer detectives, hey, limit what you get exposed to. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if you don't have to see, you know, a dead body or a body that's decapitated or has been eviscerated, like, if you don't have to see that stuff and you're not part of like trying to learn from it and working it as a case, try not to look at it. And so some people look at me and they're like, man, you're crazy. Like, that's what we do. And I'm like, yes, there's a certain aspect of it. But if you find yourself constantly just kind of wanting to look because you're curious, as people get older, the brain starts to adapt and the brain doesn't want to remember all the horrors that it has seen. And kind of like what you touched on, things that we do in our youth, especially with fights and stuff like that, that as we get older, if we're reflecting, we may start to go, man, I actually kind of feel bad about that. Now I can see that person's perspective, you know, that, you know, he thought I did something and, you know, the fight was on. I won the fight. I felt good at, you know, age 20, knocking this dude out. But then at age 40 or something, I look back and go, man, like, I actually, if I would have just slowed down and explained to him, you know, yeah, man, maybe you misread this. I didn't do what you thought I did. Instead, it was just, you know, throwing hands in the middle of the street.
Yeah, a lot of situations can just be eliminated just from a simple conversation. You know what I'm saying? But it's just like, I've done some stuff that I see people years later with their kids, and I see them as a father now, and I'm like, dang, bro, I'm just proud. And they looking at me like, I'm shocked you changed, man. It's just like, yeah, man, it just, and then you just feel it. Then you end up being cool. Then you end up being friends for years. You like, dang, man, all them years we were beefing, man. We could have been starting our trucking company, or it's just stuff like that that you just don't realize. But sometimes you have to go through those life decisions and stuff to hit a place where you're willing to learn, or you're forced to learn to just become that better person that you need to be.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I was fortunate growing up that I saw both sides of the world, you know, people that were committing crimes and then people who were just trying to get by day to day. And I knew enough to know that as people get a little bit older, they do change. They do kind of calm down. Like, I had some older cousins that I was hoping would calm down a little bit, you know. But it's one of those things, like you said, two people can be rivals, you know, when they're younger. And then if given time and perspective, they realize, man, all this time we could have been building together, or at least just living in peace where you go by, you pass by, and I pass by, and everything is good. One of those things that I try to harp on and try to tell people is, like, understand that some people are pushed into these rivalries too. Like, some people are told from the get-go, like, we hate this dude or we hate this block. But you know what I'm saying? So it's like one of those things where when people are told that, then they just follow suit. Like, if I'm new in the organization or in the gang and you tell me we don't like dudes from this block or we don't like dudes from this set, then I'm going to follow with what y'all do, you know? And so if the first time blood's drawn in a fight or a shot, you know, shots fired or whatever, now there's some skin in the game where that person who may not have understood the rivalry now understands, oh, we're going to beef, and this person, you know, fought me or beat up my buddy. Now I've seen something that is personal, and it's actually starting to kind of, you know, it's starting to address me on a different level. So then they got it, and they're like, all right, we're going to keep this rivalry going. And it's funny, like I tell people, some of the worst violence can occur when like a blood set goes to war with another blood set, or Crips versus Crips. Like historically, 8-Trey Gangsta Crips have been beefing with Rolling 60 Neighborhood Crips going all the way back to like 78 or 79, I think. And then so you see these rivalries that go back because of that, because of personal violence. And then that generation grows up seeing it. And then they teach the next ones that get brought home, like, okay, we got beef with them and this is why. You know what I mean? So it's like historical that way. And so that's why I tell people, understand if you've got more than one gang in the city, it can always pop off where there's going to be beef. It doesn't always mean it's that way. And I do hope that like as gangs are evolving, they're starting to fully understand we don't need a lot of violence in the street, you know? So it's one of those that you may be muted. I lost you just for a second. I can't hear you. I lost you for a second. Mm-mm. Now, y'all bear with us just for a second. Mm-mm. Yeah. That's all right. What we're going to do is, I'm going to wrap up this episode here, and then we're just going to have a part two to that, and it'll work out all right. So y'all just bear with me. Y'all tune back in whenever we get episode two back up and running with Level. All right. We'll try it one more time. Can you hear me? All right. You good?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Can you
hear me? All right. So, hey, look, if y'all are listening, that was a psych. I about told everybody we were going to wrap up because we were having some audio issues. I think we're good now. We'll see. Or maybe not. Man, I lost you again. Can you hear me? All right. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. We're good now, I think.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good now.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So all I was saying was the historical beefs between sets. Mm-hmm. So I was just simply saying, even though someone is a Crip, depending on what set they are, they can also beef or have feuds with other Crips. You know, mm-hmm. Same thing in the blood world. Like one blood set can go to war with another blood set, or at least just have beef or historically haven't gotten along. And so sometimes that's an eye-opener for people to fully understand. But all it does is set up that cycle of violence for that next level of young guys getting brought home, or girls, you know, girls in the gang now too. That's another thing. People are always like,
some are more vicious.
Okay. Yeah. Tell everybody like about that.
Yeah. Some, and to be honest with you, some of the females that become a part of this be more vicious than the men. They come in already with a vendetta against men, and come in already with a mentality of, I have to prove that I should be treated as equal. You don't have to treat me as, and they come in hard swinging, man. So yeah, mm-hmm. I've seen some instances where some women have led some sets, you know, mm-hmm. because of their reputation of being ruthless. So it's like, yeah, man, don't never underestimate them either.
Yeah, again, same thing like in society. As society changes and women have gotten into combat arms in the military and or flying jets, and you know, all these boundaries are being broken, where before mm-hmm. women were denied certain access or certain jobs. In the gang world, it's the same way. And I've been around long enough to see that, where it used to be, you know, you would have a girl hanging out mm-hmm. and she might carry a gun for somebody, or she might drive a car, but she was not an actual member. Yeah. And now you're seeing girls getting jumped in, carrying guns, putting in work, like shooting at people, actively driving that type of beef or that type of feud. And then like Level was just saying, like moving up in rank. So the next generation will see that differently and say, okay, if she's got the heart and she's put in work, then she's the same as I am. You know what I mean? So it breaks that down. But you also bring up a good point about going harder than the men, because sometimes the women want to prove themselves. to the other men, like, you know, don't treat me like I'm weak or like I can't handle this just because I'm a woman. And then and go a little bit more, kind of like you see sometimes like dudes that grow up in a smaller town or in the suburbs, then they join a set and then they're in the city or they're around other guys in that set. And if somebody like makes fun of them or says like, you know, yeah, you're from, you know, wherever or whatever, then that person's like, all right, well, I'm going to show you. And it's either they're the ones going out there shooting or, you know, just kind of like a little quick to pop off when other dudes who've been around would be like, I don't really have anything to prove. You know, my name's good. Like I don't have to build my reputation the way this person does from whatever town they're from.
From up top, you know what I'm saying? Or from Midwest or whatever. You get it like that a lot, especially when you come from a different area. I always say different zone. I say that because it's like you get people that you can maybe from. We may be from the same state, but you may just be from a different city. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, or you may get people that's from a whole another state and come to your state and they just do stuff differently where they're from. So they're going to show you, we don't tolerate this shit where we from. So you know what I'm saying? Then you get people that look at it and they fear you. That's how a lot of people back in the generation I came from would come from up top or come from other areas where you know it's real popular at. And will come down here and will be able to tell us they have this outrageous rank, and then they'll do something crazy. We'll be like, oh shit, this nigga just pulled his gun out in front of everybody and just shot Brian in the foot. And then we just thinking like damn, he crazy. But where he's from, that's normal. That's everyday activity. You know what I'm saying? And just because we seen that, now we fear him. Now we want to flip under him. He's our big homie now. And then we get there. Then until later on, we start patching in to where he's from the other guys. They start like, little blank blank. Oh man, we should take his milk money. Oh, he's soft as shit. And then we'd be like, oh damn. You know what I'm saying? We was misled. So we get a lot of people that go through those stages.
Mm-hmm. And when you say misled, sometimes men or women, sometimes they change. So that kid that, you know, got victimized at some point started either learning how to fight or realized I'm gonna grab a gun and now everybody's gonna listen to me, kind of thing. And then they start popping shots and start putting in work like that to where everybody goes, okay, like this is the one that we're going to follow. It is interesting as people grow up and as they come up through the ranks, what it was like watching them grow up and seeing them in the neighborhood and start, you know, you start to see young guys and girls. But for me, it was like seeing a lot of young guys throwing a little B up, a little C up, you know, like they just start to throw a little hand signs, almost like to mimic what their older cousins or, you know, friends or whatever dudes in the neighborhood. And then you worry as an adult, like, man, that kid is already like fast tracking into that lifestyle. So like, I always ask people, like, is there anything that people could say or do to try to stop a younger person from joining a gang?
I say be more observant, because you can kind of see when a person going through something are beginning to change. And then once you see the observant of the change, start being more concerning. And when I say being concerning, start asking, hey, how's your day? Is anything you want to talk to me about? Hey, we do love you. You know that. Hey, is there anything you want to do that I need to work on to so that we can, you know what I'm saying, get you in a better mood, I get you better. Just start showing a little bit more concern, because a lot of these kids and a lot of these don't have people asking them how their day was, or asking them this and that, or trying to feed them or trying to be there. That's why they turn to these people on the streets, and then boom.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of people, I think, are quick as soon as a kid gets in trouble to write them off, you know, or as soon as they know for a fact, like, okay, and kids are joining and they've been joining for a while, like at a younger age, you know, depending on the set, whether the set's going to set age limits or not, or who they're going to recruit from. But when a kid, once they join, it does seem like people want to write them off and go, oh, well, that kid's, you know, 17, 16, whatever, and they join that gang, I'm done with them.
And you want to know what's crazy about that statement is them be the kids that be inventing the newest things and be the smartest doctors and be everything because they made that one mistake and messed up that one time. They write him off as not knowing. He has a 4.08 grade point average. Like, you know what I'm saying? He's the smartest. That's why a lot of our kids get misled. That's what I'm meaning. Sometimes with the decision we make and with the less concern, they feel like they're not important. So they give up them dreams. And they give up, you know what I'm saying, showing that they're smart and showing that they can apply themselves. And then they become what you already think they are, failures.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can't stress that enough. And it's pretty much any adult can at least try to help kids or people out as best they can in that sense. Because at some point they're going, if they live long enough, they don't, you know, get shot or killed. Like, live long enough to where if you keep telling them things that starts to set in, like, okay, like even, you know, like my big homie told me one thing, but whatever, the barber told me this, or the dude down the street that works for UPS, like he always, you know, says hey to me. He's always like, you know, polite kind of guy, but he also asked me like where I'm going to be in life. Like, I can remember as a kid, men that you know, at times, whether I was working in a tobacco field and talking with this Army sergeant who kind of got me on the right path, or if it was guys that I was doing work with, like plumbers and stuff like that, that would pay me under the table to go do work. But they would also, you know, talk to me like, hey, what's your future like? Like, what are you going to do? Because there were people around me doing stuff, you know, that was not good. And I think for me, I had my mind was open enough to where I listened to these guys and like, okay, you know, like, okay, if you got a good life and things worked out for you, then maybe I need to kind of listen when you're telling me things. But I do want to say that I think when families are going through this stuff and teenagers are starting to get in trouble with the law and carrying guns and really bringing that drama to the home front, as in like shots getting fired into the house, I also fully understand when a parent or guardian or grandparent says, you can't stay here. Like, you are not listening to me. You turned your back on the family. You're doing something now that's actually going to get all of us killed. You can't stay here. Cause that has happened numerous times. And I was always conflicted, you know, in police world, like, well, now what's expected from that kid, but also I fully understand the family saying we don't want to get shot in our beds. We don't, you know what I mean? Like, so what do you think? Like, what, I mean,
I grew up with a younger sister, an older brother, you know, they had stuff going for themselves, and I was just the kid that just got off track. And my mom would she would attend to the gang of, the meetings and, all that stuff. So she would know what's going on in the community and stuff. And she would pick up on stuff. And she'd be like, I see the same boys you hanging with. You can't be in my house. You got to go. I don't want that mess here. And I'd be like, no, mom, dude. And she'd keep me out and stuff. And then I'd be like, I'm like, mom, until you did it. So I understood it because I had a friend. Their mom did that to him, but she felt so bad for her baby. She would let him stay there. And then the house got shot up and then the younger brother got killed. You know what I'm saying? And she was like, dang, had I just would have listened, you know what I'm saying, just to let you be out my house, and when they never came to my house. You know what I'm saying? So I be understanding that, hey, don't bring it here because other people here, there's other innocent people here that has nothing to do with the foolery that you're taking up in, that's in the crossfire.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the situation you talked about, I could probably count 10 to 15 times. Even just as my year or two on aggravated assault working shootings, like it was that constant occurrence of just families catching the stray bullets, you know. Yeah. And it's tough too. I always tell people it's tough getting on scene. And like one was Sereno versus Sereno. So it was like two gangs that were beefing with one another, but they were just constantly shooting back and forth. I mean, to the point where I went to two shootings, two different parts of the city in one night. And these dudes were just like, you wouldn't hear anything about these two cliques or these two groups until it kicked off like that. And so when they started shooting back and forth, it was just crazy. But to see an elderly, you know, you're talking about an 80 plus year old great grandfather take a bullet, you know, into bed. And it was tough. You know, you see that and you're like, this guy's lived his whole life in another country, you know, he's come to America, his family's in America. He thinks he's kind of made it out of a very dangerous area. Yep. And then his grandson is bringing this stuff straight to the house. And I say that too, to say, you know, even though most cities, at least in the South, have a little bit of everything, man, Bloods, Crips, Sereños, Latin Kings, Gangster Disciples, Vice Lords, Latin Disciples, like, it's just so much of it all throughout the South because of the population shifts and people getting arrested and going away to federal prison. And just that it almost is a little overwhelming, I think, for most agencies. So they just kind of go hands off and say, oh, well, we're only going to address the crime. We're not going to worry about the gangs or worry about having to know much about the gangs. Because I always hear people say, well, gang world, everything's changing all the time anyway, so why try to keep up with it? And there are some things that change, but also there's some consistencies. Yeah. And that's what I always try to tell people is, like, you know, there are things that are going to be consistently happening. And historically, it's okay if you learn something and they stop doing it 2 or 3 years later. Oh, well, it's not, you know, it's, you just remember that they did it. I kind of say that to say, people always go like, well, if there are more gangs in the South, how are we going to stop this problem? And I always tell people, like, you'll get overwhelmed with that idea. Think about keeping the violence down. That's the number one problem. Because if a gang exists in the city and that department doesn't really know much about that gang, it's probably because they're not committing a whole lot of violence, you know? So, and like, you know, every set's a little bit different in the sense of, are they going to be more community-based? Are they going to be more about putting fear in the hearts of everybody? You know, is their leadership violent or is their leadership a little smart and like, hey, we're going to be more business-minded or maybe operate a little more like the mafia or, you know, that sort of thing. I don't know other than to say, for the individual that joins, I don't know too many guys that joined a gang and their lives got better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's the main thing is, like, if people were talking to younger teenagers who were either dabbling in it or exposed to it, or they actually do join and however the adults are interacting with them, if it's a social worker, a teacher, hospital staff, neighborhood, whatever, like, if you're encountering a kid like that, I would think probably the one thing that you could talk about to them is their future. Help them any way you can to talk about jobs and what they want to be and what they're going to do and focus on. And then ask them about that, like, whose life got really, really great in the gang. Because sadly, I mean, it's a law of averages. You stay in that set long enough, and either you're going to get got by rivals, your own people, if you make somebody mad in your own set and they cross you, or you get picked off by law enforcement and then go to prison, you know, behind gang stuff. So I do kind of want to end on a positive note like that a lot of people get overwhelmed or get completely scared, you know, when they start hearing the word about gangs and stuff like that. And I just kind of want people to understand that it's here. It's not going to go away, but it also doesn't mean it has to be an us versus them thing. It's a us versus it. Like, we as human beings don't want the violence and we don't want an ideology or a presence of gangs who are committing violence, you know? So it's, I would say that, like, it's a us, you know, all of us, versus just that idea of, like, the violence. And that's my thing anyway. Like, I don't care if somebody's in a gang. I would prefer people don't do that. I want to see young men and women and people grow up to have jobs and not have to worry about the stress, like you were talking about, and not having to worry about their past catching up with them. And the best way to do that is to avoid joining the gangs, but also we can't look at every gang member with hate in our heart and want to just lock everybody up and think that's the answer either, you know? So, well, look, man, we're going to wrap up, but one of the things that I always talk about is ending things on a positive note, and don't give any specifics, but or would you say that your life right now is better than it was 5 years ago?
Yes. I could say right now, my life is a lot better because of where I was headed. Where I was headed was, if I would have kept down that path, you wouldn't even be talking to me right now. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I'm a cherishing growing up being a father. I cherish growing up being a career man. And I just cherish being free. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, you can get out. You can start a business or have a career, or even be a family man for all the years you missed being in that lifestyle. Take advantage of it, man, because life is too short. That's how I look at it.
I appreciate your time, man. We're going to wrap up on that. Disruptors, all right. Out.